I wasn't super worried about it. You know, I think I just knew that it could potentially get really difficult in the last bit. Like people always talk about, you know, the race starting at mile 20. And so I just didn't really know what that was going to be like, you know, what 6 miles at the end of a marathon was going to feel like. You know, I realized that experience might be pretty uncomfortable, but I was also excited about that. Over the last couple of years, I've started like meditating and trying to bring like some more mindfulness, just like my whole experience, but running too. And so I was kind of embracing this idea of like, rather than trying to avoid the suffering and the discomfort, to like try to embrace that opportunity. And like, what better opportunity than the last 6 miles of a marathon?
I think this is really important for our listeners to consider. Like in lifting, they talk about success in something. So if you're gonna run your first marathon, if you're gonna be successful at that, in lifting, they say success is in the setup. It's all about how you set the lift up, how you brace, how you position your foot, how you put your mouth guard in the same way every time, how you do your straps the same way every time. That's exactly what you did a good job of with this marathon.
I think one of the things that I've learned, you know, maturing as an athlete, as a runner, just being like a little bit more realistic about stuff, setting yourself up for success on a regular basis is super important. And I knew for me that having a good first experience was something that I really wanted to get out of my first marathon. Ryan, I love that you put a lot of emphasis on is like positive forward momentum and excitement and enthusiasm about what you're doing. Like that's huge. And if you can bring that to your next training block and just like keep that momentum moving forward, man, that makes a huge difference. I think sometimes we don't emphasize that enough.
For you guys out there who are thinking about signing up for marathon, like that would be a huge kind of pointer that I'd give to you that Chad kind of illustrated here, is like choose a course that is in good conditions and flat and fast, and just be worried about the distance, not the hills at mile 17 or 19. All right, so this is the podcast retake back episode. This is the former host Ryan, and I am stealing my podcast back from my little brother. No, it's still our podcast. This is the Run Through podcast, and we're just a family, big family. But I am actually taking this episode back because I'm super stoked. My little bro just debuted in the Mesa Marathon, his first ever road marathon. So we're going to get into that. We're going to chat about that, his first experiences, things he's learned on the road, and just what it was like to debut. And hopefully all you guys who are either going to be making your debut soon can get some information from this, some tips from this, some inspiration from this. And for you guys who've already run a marathon, you're probably going to be nodding your head a lot, being like, yep, that happened to me too. So I'm stoked to get this episode with my little brother, Chad, your guy's host. First off, how are we feeling after the marathon? How many weeks are we post-marathon here, Trey Dog?
Yeah, so we're 2 weeks post-marathon. Just did our first like full workout back. We had kind of a tester. So what, this is now Tuesday. So yeah, 2 weeks and a little bit. Our first workout was on Friday of last week. First big workout on Sunday. And yeah, now I'm actually feeling good. It's been a little bit of a rough go, to be honest. Legs were thrashed afterwards, which, you know, I do a ton of trail racing. Like I've done some 50K trail races. I have a ton of, you know, for loss and gain. And, yeah, nothing has come close to how sore my quads have been from this.
So Chad, the test of every marathoner for how trash, quote unquote, trashed your legs are, is how many days you're still sore walking downstairs post marathon. So can you remember how many days you're sore for after Mesa, walking downstairs?
Oof, yeah. So I'm trying to think. So I also caught a cold. That was kind of the other part of my recovery process. And I think before I got back to running after that cold, my quads were still pretty darn sore. So I want to say that it was probably like we race on Saturday, probably on like Thursday, Friday, I was still struggling to like be able to get down onto the ground, you know, where you're kind of like, instead of bending your legs, you kind of just like topple over onto your hands.
Yeah, that's how you know you got it good. That sounds like you got a good genuine first marathon experience post. Well, hey, congrats, man. Super excited for your race. What'd it feel like to finish and to be like, I'm finally a marathoner? I guess for you, it's a little bit different because you've done it out in the mountains before, and but still, your first road marathon, how did it feel coming across the line?
Good. Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting race, the way the actual just like logistics of the course all played out, because the half marathon, 10K and 5K all share the same course on the last part. So, and I mean, you know this, riding on the bike with me, it got chaotic near the end there. So it was interesting having like going from totally just quiet to just like kind of chaos there for a while. But that was also kind of a nice distraction. Like, people were cheering me on, and it was fun to kind of share that space with them. But it felt good. You know, I have to admit that, you know, even doing trail races, you know, over the marathon distance, it's got a totally different rhythm to it. Like, the road marathon is definitely more of this, like, this squeeze that's happening, right? Where you're like, progressively things are just tightening up on you. And so I was a little bit scared going into it, just in terms of like exploring something completely unknown. You know, I think that's always, it can be a little scary, but also really fun and really exciting. So I think it was interesting. It was just such an interesting experience. I think we'll get into it more, but just the sensation of those closing miles were not necessarily what I expected them to feel like. So yeah, it was awesome to finish up. And I think if you can walk away from your first marathon and feel like, you know, that was a good experience that I had, then that's a huge success.
Yeah. Was it harder than you thought it was going to be, or not as hard as you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, kind of. I would say overall not as hard, but it's not like I could have run faster, you know? It was a weird thing of like, it felt like I was about to like really get into that more similar suffering to what I've experienced, you know, in like sort of like half marathon, 10K sort of efforts, where like you really suffer at the end of those races, where you're pushing super hard. And it just doesn't, like, I don't think my heart rate really got all that elevated during the race. Like, I think the highest it got was like a little over 170, which, you know, in terms of like effort on that front, is not that hard. But man, yeah, like, definitely, it was just, it all just changed pretty quickly, you know, where it's like, feel like I'm about to just smash it. And all of a sudden you're like, my head was like kind of going back. I'm like, I don't know what's happening right now, but I'm kind of in the pain cave.
Doing a little Eric Little impersonation.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I don't,
we'll walk through the,
yeah. The yeah. I was like, yeah. I don't know why my neck is so tired right now, but.
Well, you didn't look it, dude. You still looked really good. That is just that last 5K. Was this very specific kind of like marathon tired look that people have? And to me, it kind of looks like you can't really pick your legs up very high anymore. Like, your knee drive just comes way, way down.
And, yeah.
You kind of had that going on a little bit, 5K. But until that point, I mean, that was, and we'll tell the whole story of the race. We're going to go back to the beginning. But for me, like, that was the funnest part of the experience for me, was like just watching you run. Like, your stride looks so good and so strong, and it looked like so much fun, you know?
Yeah.
Always actually been jealous of everyone likes my stride, and like Runner's World has done articles about it and stuff, but I was always a little jealous of your stride. I always thought you had the best stride in the family.
Really? That's funny. Yeah, it's funny because the stride, it's like, what looks good is kind of like, it's not for sure the most efficient thing. You know, sometimes I look at my stride for the marathon, and I don't know if you felt this way, but it's like, maybe I need to, like, you know, not have such a big like swing out the back, right? Because it's like, that's like, do you really need to be doing that for an entire marathon?
This big, huge gap. Galloping stride, like super powerful.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like, you know.
yeah. But yeah, like, I you know, you took some videos along the way, and I was happy with the way I looked in those videos. I was like, that looked good. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you see videos of yourself running and it doesn't look as good as you thought it did. So I was happy with it.
Yeah. Well, dude, I want to hear more about like what your expectations were. And like I said, we are going to go back and tell the whole story, but something you said cued me on this. like what your expectations were before the race and then how they were either met or not met in the race. Like, what were you most nervous about before? And was there some like validity to that nervousness that you were experiencing before?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't really that nervous about this one, which was, you know, that was purposeful, right? Like, I think we had talked about kind of how we were going to give me an introduction to the marathon. We had thought about, like, initially I was going to do CIM in December. I was going to do Houston. You know, this has actually been like a 2-year process for us to actually get ourselves to a marathon. And so like I chose Mesa for that reason, and that it's a forgiving course. I knew that even if I exploded, like it wouldn't be so bad, right? Like there's no hill at the end that you just like end up, you know, going like 6-minute mile pace. You know, which if you're running 5-minute pace and you run a 6-minute last mile, that kind of destroys your whole effort in one short bout. So yeah, I think I wasn't super worried about it. You know, I think I just knew that it could potentially get really difficult in the last bit. Like people always talk about, you know, the race starting at mile 20. And so I just didn't really know what that was going to be like, you know, what 6 miles at the end of a marathon was going to feel like. You know, I realized that experience might be pretty uncomfortable. But I was also excited about that. You know, I think, you know, I've over the last couple of years, I've started like meditating and trying to bring like some more mindfulness, just like my whole experience, but running too. And so I was kind of embracing this idea of like, rather than trying to avoid the suffering and the discomfort, to like try to embrace that opportunity. And like, what better opportunity than the last 6 miles of a marathon to like really kind of let yourself experience it and, you know, kind of explore like what that feels like. Cause it is its own sensation, right?
Yeah, and like you said, it's actually like not as intense as shorter distances, you know, like I think one of the hardest, most intense pains in running is running an all out 400 or an all out 800. Like, I think that's the most intense pain you can experience in running. Like the experience of the marathon as you experience it is not as intense. It's almost like someone just like took a meat beater. What are those things called? A tenderizer.
You're just like,
and, just tenderize the, like just did that on your quads like a million times, you know? And so it's like they're kind of like this numb, dull, low energy, just like feel like they've been beaten up, but it's not like this really intense, stabbing, sharp, like really uncomfortable pain. It's kind of like this weird kind of numbing pain, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think I was expecting it to be more like that 800, 1500 sort of pain, but for longer. So I was thinking like it was going to get that level of tough and that I was going to have to just like be like super zen about it and just like kind of like keep moving forward and not think too much about it. Which we were talking a little bit before this, we started recording, that like I'm kind of an overthinker. So I think, you know, these moments that I get to practice getting out of my head a little bit, you know, are really worthwhile to me. And it wasn't like that. Like in that regard, it was actually easier, which in some ways is disappointing because like I still didn't have a super great last like 5-6 miles, right? Like I still was slowing down. So I'm kind of like in this position of how do I get better at that last 6 miles, when it wasn't about being able to suffer more in that regard. It was kind of like, you have to get you have to keep your legs moving fast, even though they're just, like you said, they're not, like it's getting stuck to the ground.
Yeah. Well, they're running out of energy.
And, yeah. And,
energy is calories, right? So we'll get into that part of your experience as well with the body. But going back to what you said, I think this is really important for our listeners to consider. Like in lifting, they talk about success in something. So if you're going to run your first marathon, if you're going to be successful at that, in lifting, they say success is in the setup. It's all about how you set the lift up, how you brace, how you position your foot, how you put your mouth guard in the same way every time, how you do your straps the same way every time, like how you move, like it's all in the setup. And like what you're saying, you're describing it. I was like, that's exactly what you did a good job of with this marathon. Is like, instead of choosing, say, maybe the most exciting marathon that's this crazy hilly course in hot conditions or something like that, you were smart about being like, okay, a marathon, it's hard enough. I need to be respectful of the marathon distance. It's a challenge in and of itself. And now I don't need to make it harder on myself by choosing some extreme course or extreme conditions. Like go like try and find something that's in good conditions, is flat and fast, that you can go roll at. I've always been like hesitant to recommend anyone when like pros are telling me like, oh, I'm debuting in New York. I'm like, I love the New York City Marathon. That was one of my favorite marathons I ever ran, but debuting there is just tough. Like it's just going to be hard. It's going to be harder than a Mesa or Houston or whatever, you know? So for you guys out there who are thinking about signing up for marathon, like that would be a huge kind of pointer that I'd give to you, that Chad kind of illustrated here, is like, choose a course that is in good conditions and flat and fast, and just be worried about the distance, not the hills at mile 17 or 19. So I think that's super important. But let's actually get into the race now, Chad. I want to hear your play-by-play of it.
Yeah.
Unless you have something you wanted to say on.
Yeah, I want to make one note on that. And that's just that I think one of the things that I've learned, you know, maturing as an athlete, as a runner, is just being like a little bit more realistic about stuff. And this is a good thing, right? To be realistic, to kind of know like how much you're putting on your plate with any one thing, right? And when we're training, we're always trying to do like incremental steps forward and not trying to jump too far forward, because it's really frustrating when you, even if you do get a jump, big jump forward, sometimes, you know, you have a few steps back afterwards. So like, to me, it's all about just like subtle progress with everything that I'm doing. And when you're jumping into a marathon for the first time, like that's a big whole new experience that you're having anyways. To also make it a demanding course on top of that, you know, that could be really fun if you're really open to the idea that like the time is not going to be anything amazing. But I think to just give yourself the proper amount of like new stimulus can set you up for success. And I think that setting yourself up for success on a regular basis is super important. And I knew for me that having a good first experience was something that I really wanted to get out of my first marathon. Cause then you just take that. And this is something that Ryan, I love that you put a lot of emphasis on, is like positive forward momentum and excitement and enthusiasm about what you're doing. Like that's huge. And if you can bring that to your next training block and just like keep that momentum moving forward, man, that makes a huge difference. I think sometimes we don't emphasize that enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, momentum is everything in all sports, you know.
And yeah.
It's crazy how you can see, like basketball, you know, like all of a sudden one team took the momentum, not crushing it, you know, so you want momentum on your side. And you do that by setting yourself up well. So talk to us a little bit about like what you felt like talking about, you know, the setup being so important. So now let's talk about like your actual setup that you did in the last 2 days before Mesa. Like what things do you feel like you did well in terms of like travel, sleep, nutrition, hydration? What kind of things did you do well? And what kind of things would you tweak on those fronts next time around that was kind of for you?
Yeah. I would say that all that went pretty well. And again, that was kind of by design, you know, like it was really easy travel to Mesa. We're not taking flights. We're just driving out there from where I'm at in San Diego. So that was another thing that I wanted to be easy. Like I've done a lot of local racing, both running and on the mountain bike. And I just know that like for me, not having a ton of logistical challenges prior to the race, you know, it just like, it takes a load off in terms of stress. So, and Mesa being like not a huge marathon also really helped that. Like the expo beforehand was super easy. It was like, you know, it was like any sort of local event you go to where it's really easy to go and get your bib and you're out of there. And You know, race morning was super easy as well. So I would say all that in terms of logistics, it was a really easy race. And, you know, I've also done triathlons where like triathlons, if you're doing like a half Ironman, which is long distance that I got to, you spend your entire day before the race just prepping everything for race day. And I remember finishing some of those days and being exhausted and being like, I don't even want to race tomorrow right now. And so I think, again, like for this one, I didn't have to do that much beforehand. But I think trying to also minimize like the pre-race stress is also massive, too. And I know for me, that makes a big difference. If I can be relaxed beforehand, that helps a lot. So I think actually the days before, nutrition wise, I felt like, Ryan, you do such a great job of reiterating, like, eat, fuel up, like you gave me good strategies for that. So I think that all went really well. You know, I think I ate really well the day before and the days leading up to it.
Last 2 days before, how was your eating different? How did it change differently than you normally eat, if it did at all?
Yeah. And this was also, you know, something that you talked to me about, and that was, you know, just shifting my typical diet is like very vegetable heavy. You know, has a lot of fibrous foods in it. So it's just shifting towards a little bit more simple, you know, a little bit more carb centric, making sure we're still getting adequate protein in there as well. And then everything shifting a little bit earlier. So especially the day before the race, it was like everything happens, you know, it's a 6:30 a.m. start. So that means, you know, I'm eating dinner by like, I think I started eating dinner before 5 p.m., you know, so everything was in my system well beforehand, and, you know, pretty easily digestible. But I also didn't go way too far away. You know, I didn't change my diet tremendously. It was just a matter of like tweaking things, you know, just not having a ton of vegetables beforehand. And then again, just like a lot of focusing on carbs, you know, because it's like you want to maximize the amount of energy you're spending on digestion. You want to make sure that, you know, that's going towards something that's going to be productive for your race, which is going to be a lot of carbohydrates and still getting some protein there and hydration too. Like I was definitely, you know, I was taking some noon tabs down as well, making sure we're getting a lot of fluids in there, but not just like flushing the whole system with just water, you know, also getting some electrolytes in there. So you're holding on to that hydration too. Cause I think that's another place you could go wrong, is where you're just like, you're peeing it all out, you know, and your body's just not actually retaining that water very well.
Dude, those noon tablets are so good for that. We were talking the other night at dinner because we were drinking them. We're like, after we drink these, we feel more thirsty.
that's funny.
That's how you know you're retaining it, you know, because they just put a whole bunch of salt in there and it's just going to stick with you.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a potentially contentious question that you're going to have to find yourself the proper answer for.
Okay.
All right. So one of my mentors in the marathon was Dina Caster, right? Amazing silver medalist, American record holder. She's done all the things that I wanted. Was a big influence for me coming up in the marathon. So I remember like one of the things she would talk about, she was like, well, you're training less in the last week before the marathon, but I just kind of eat the same as I would eat if I'm training normally. So meaning she's eating a lot when she's training normally. So she keeps eating a lot. And that was kind of like how she quote unquote carb loaded, right?
Yeah.
I was kind of being the man of extremes that I am. I like to reduce my training load, but then also increase the amount of eating I was doing, right? And yeah. So like I was super hard. I was way above. So like I always went to bed the night before a marathon feeling super full. I woke up in the morning before the marathon feeling super full. And then I drink a caloric shake of like 600 calories just to top it off, right?
Yeah.
Just forcing down the calories. That in mile 23, I need energy, and energy is calories, right?
Yeah.
So where do you fall? Those are kind of like two different spectrums on carb loading. Those are both carb loading systems, you know. Mm-hmm. Dina's was less aggressive than mine. She's also a much smaller person than me. She's like 100 pounds, and I was 100. pounds, right? So you got to take that into consideration as well. But where did you fall on that delicate balance between those two?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm somewhat in between. I think it can kind of, it is a hard balance. And I feel like maybe it's one of those things that you do have to kind of find what works for you. And even, you know, I was talking with Sarah a little bit after the race, and we were talking about kind of fueling strategies and how different people go about it, where you can either like really preload and make sure that you're like topped up on glycogen, or you can like really try to heavily fuel the effort itself with like, you know, we're lucky in these days, you have a lot of options in terms of what you could be taking down the course, in terms of like the density of your drink mix, gels, all that stuff. So I would say I'm somewhere in between those two, where like, I'm definitely, I think in the days leading up to it, making like I'm overloading, right? Cause I typically like to more eat like intuitively, like listening to my body and my hunger signals. But like prior to a marathon, you gotta override those a bit, right? Because your body doesn't necessarily know, hey, we're about to just like beat the heck out of you tomorrow. So I would say like
your body's intuitively surviving.
Yeah. So I would say I think that this time, again, I like to listen to my hunger signals. So I think like 3 days out, I was pretty hungry. So I remember eating a lot that day. And then, so I think I was like getting pretty well topped off. So that would be like Wednesday, Thursday, then I'm still eating good. Friday, you know, now I'm again like eating good, carbo loading. So I think I had like 3 solid days of eating there, but I wasn't, and I like to do that. I kind of like to be ahead on the fueling strategy. So I'm not necessarily going crazy the day before, but I'm still eating like, you know, way more than I need for my activity level at that point, because I'm definitely dropping, you know, quite a bit from like actually one of the things that was interesting is this felt like the first time I've tapered, like properly tapered in like years. Like this was like, I think I have chronically never given myself enough rest looking back at like, you know, trail racing stuff that I've done. And maybe that might be from bike racing, where like it's almost better to carry some more fatigue into your racing, just because, I don't know, like the racing just kind of dictates that for some reason. But running, I felt like my legs felt like money. It felt so good to just like have things mobile and moving again. So that part of it, yeah, was a totally different experience. But yeah, I don't know. I might, to be honest, I would maybe go a little heavier on the food next time. Like I think I could have even ratchet that up a little bit, just because, you know, it's like the cost reward of that is really heavy on the cost of it if you don't do it well.
Think about it this way, like to put on weight, you have to eat like 3,000 extra calories to gain a pound, right?
Yeah.
Is what I believe. You can correct that in the show notes if I'm wrong on that.
It is. Yeah, it's like 3,500.
Yeah. So like you can err on the side of too much by like 1,000 and you're going to put on a third of a pound. Like that sounds like it's worth the trade, like err on too much rather than too little. But you made some excellent points there too. A lot of it comes to like, how depleted are you when you come into that taper week, right? Like yeah. I was going from like losing weight my entire build up. Every week I'd lose like 0.5 pound and I'd start out way too heavy, way out of shape and heavy, but I'd lose like 0.5 pound every week. So then I went from like, you know, not meeting my caloric needs to then probably just like meeting them on that taper week, the last weekend, you know, because I'm training less. So now I'm eating the same. So I'm probably just meeting my needs now. And then at the end, I'm loading. And to me, it feels like an insane amount of calories because it's more than I'm typically taking in. And really, though, I'm just topping off my liver glycogen, topping off all the glycogen in my muscles. Whereas like if you're coming into that taper week and you're already topped off, then yeah, you're not going to get much response from a carb load. So yeah. I think that's something that's not talked about a lot, is like, how are you coming into this carb loading phase? Like if you're all good, you're all topped off, Like, you don't need to do a carb load. That's not going to help you at all. You know, it's just going to make you feel nasty. Taking a bunch of water weight. Oxygen you're taking in. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that's, and yeah, to kind of circle back to what I did, I think that's the reason why I didn't feel like I needed to do the whole week that way. But like, I did do like the kind of the last few days is during that taper week. And we might talk about this a little bit, but like your body can go through some like weird sort of sensations. So the week prior to like the full tape, so 2 weeks out, you know, we had started to back the training off, and that was like the first, I think the last 3 weeks we were kind of like starting to trickle off, but especially the last 2 weeks, like that was the first bit of like real rest my body had gotten in a while. Cause I had rolled straight from like essentially a season of like trail running straight into marathon training, thinking I was doing a marathon December, and that stretched all the way to February. So that first little bit off was like a real tapering. I think my body just went to recovery mode, and I was hungry. I was hungry and I was tired. So that week prior to that, I had done a lot of just like resting and eating. And this is where like the psychology of that, I think we had talked that week, because I was kind of, you know, it's like, I think you had said something about like, you're a veteran at this. I know you know what you're doing, but if you want to chat, like, let me know. And I was like, dude, I do not feel like a veteran. Like, I'm freaking out a little bit because my body is all sorts of weird right now. I think I brought a little bit of fuel into the week in general. Like, I had kind of gone through this phase of like recovery, eating a bunch. And then I started feeling really good. Like my last like pre-race workout the weekend prior went really well. I came into the week just feeling like a million bucks. So then it was like kind of managing that. Cause I think the problem that can happen if you go overboard with it is, you can only put on a pound with 3,500 extra calories, but you can carry a bucket load of water weight if your sugar and salt is too high. Like, and that's why I like to do it. I like to almost get ahead of it beforehand. So in those last few days, maybe you can kind of like sort that out a bit where, you know, your body's fueled, but you're not just like overloaded on like way too much salt and sugar, which, you know, it's just not a good sensation to have like a bunch of like bouncing water weight on you.
Yeah, you know, who's got this completely dialed in, like the most dialed of any sport is bodybuilders. Because they want their glucose to be full so that their muscles are full. They want their muscles full of glucose, full of water, so not depleted at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Carb loaded. But they also want to look really shredded, right? And really vascular and all that. So they actually need like their sodium to be lower. And so there's this whole crazy strategy about how they can go about doing this. If anyone's interested, we should do a future podcast episode on it, because it's actually super interesting.
Yeah.
But they might take it a little bit too far from a hydration standpoint. You wouldn't necessarily be like super borderline dehydrated out there, you know, but you're like, my muscles are full of glucose, but I'm like borderline dehydrated.
I've listened to some guys talked about that whole process of getting, you know, shredded or whatever, and it is interesting, because they have to be so dialed with that, right? Like, this, if you're going for the aesthetic of it, you have to be so on point with it. I almost feel like as endurance athletes, if we took that all in a much more moderate way, like that could be useful. But man, those guys also just know, I think, how to just like not feel good during that process of getting shredded and just endure like the pain of it.
It's definitely, they're not in the optimal performance state looking like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it is like purely aesthetics. Not what necessarily runners are going for, but you could still like learn some valuable, I think, keys from those guys. Actually, what you said too reminded me of, I think that's super, well, first off, your intuitive eating saved you. Could you imagine like if during that period where, you know, you were recovering, but it was kind of like far out from the race, if you'd been like really strict on your nutrition, you're just like, nope, I'm not even training that hard. I'm not going to let myself eat more. And then you don't give your body what it's craving during that time. You wanted more calories right then, you know? And so like, I think that's where that strategy you have is is really, really good, especially if you can flex with it a little bit and, you know, load up a little bit before big races. And but that definitely kind of saved you, I think. I think that was great.
Yeah. And a little note on that, you know, just on a kind of personal level, it's like, I think in the winter, I really struggled to like keep weight off. So like leading into that final bit, I definitely wasn't as lean as I was hoping to get. Like, I felt like I'd actually put on a little bit of weight, just kind of struggling to keep it off in the wintertime. So there was a little battle in my mind of thinking like, I maybe should try to like squeeze in a little bit of weight loss here, you know, in the last like three weeks out from the marathon. And I'm really happy that I really just like embraced the reality of like, just accept where you're at right now. You know, it's fine. Like, just like do what you need to do, what is like rational thinking to this process here. And again, that's where I think it's good to have people giving you good cues around you. And Ryan, you did such a great job of this, of like, I think as runners, we have a tendency to think about weight too much anyways. And as my coach, you did a good job of like, you're fine, like your weight's good. Like, let's get you strong, let's get you fit, like fuel your body well. And those cues, I think, make a massive difference. So to coaches and athletes alike, I would say like, make sure that you are both giving people good cues like that, and then also be cognizant of the cues that you're getting from people that are supporting you.
Yeah, dude, that's funny, because I'm shooting you those texts. I'm like, hey, dude, like, you know, make sure you eat enough today, good workout tomorrow, whatever I was saying, you know. I'm always like, he already knows this, I don't need to send this text message. But I also know what it's like to like be and be like, have that mindset we were talking about, where you are weight conscious. Mm-hmm. And weight is a factor. It's not a game of whoever is the lightest is the fastest. Your lightest self will not be your fastest self. Like, don't get us wrong here. But if you're saying like weight is not an issue in running, it 100% is, you know. Like, I think there's not one elite runner that would not agree with that statement, you know. So it's okay to think about it. We obviously want to just frame that up in a healthy mindset. And I think that last 3 weeks, the taper time, or even like the last, I didn't like to step on the scale that last 3 weeks for that reason. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I don't want to be thinking about my weight. I don't want to be thinking about how much I'm eating and being worried about putting on a pound, because I had those same worries myself, and you know, when I was going through it in my career. So that's why, knowing that, knowing what thoughts were going through my head when I was tapering, I'm like, if Chad is having these same thoughts, this is what I'm telling myself, right?
Yeah.
It always feels that way, dude. It always feels like, oh dude, I'm getting soft, I'm getting a little bit heavy, I can tell, like, I can't, you know what I mean? It's really easy to get on that storyline in your head and get on that loop, and it just keeps playing, you know. So sometimes you gotta just break that loop off.
Yeah. And I think in that last, like, I think that's a really good strategy, and I would suggest that to people, that like, even if you're somebody who like tracks weight, you know, pretty closely, because I think there's a case for it and against it, you know. I think you got to do what works for you. So I think for some people, actually knowing where your weight's at brings some amount of like, you know, might bring your stress level down, actually just know where it is. Whereas for some people, I think getting away from it altogether might be a healthier mindset. But in those last couple of weeks, you know, like I was saying, my body went through this process of like really needing to recover, really needing like enough fuel to recover, right? And your body weight in terms of water weight can fluctuate so dramatically when it's going through that process. And even though like aesthetic way that your body looks during that can change a lot. And so like, don't freak out if it does, because it's perfectly fine. And I think actually a good thing to go through those fluctuations. So yeah, in that period of time, I think, like I was saying, you know, maybe I wasn't 100% ideal where I wanted to be, or, you know, could ideally be. But then at that point, it's like, accept where you are. You know, it's like your race is never going to be like it probably as optimal as you thought about it, or how you imagine it in your head. And at some point, you just have to accept where you're at, and then just, you know, believe in what you've got done, and still, you know, be hopeful about the race itself. Because, you know, like I went back and was looking at the workouts we've done. I'm like, I'm in shape. Like, I'm in really good fitness, and I'm still very much excited to go out and see what I have in the tank right now, you know?
Dude, it's so funny when you're talking. I was just thinking, I was like, I don't think I've ever one time, and I've been to the Olympics, I've run 206, run 204. I don't think I've ever been on the starting line, the guy that I was hoping I would be 6 months before that. You know? Like, you always have these, like, grandiose thoughts of how fit you're going to be, how lean you're going to be, how shredded you're going to be, whatever. No, I didn't care about the shredded part when I was running, but you know, you always like picture yourself just being like a demigod starting line, you know, and it never happened, not one time. So I love what you said, like, you got to just freaking let go of that stuff and just accept where you're at and know that there, dude, you might be in a lot better shape than you think you're in. Like, when I ran 204, I didn't think I was in 204 shape. And granted, it's downhill, wind at my back. The hand of God was literally pushing me the entire way. Still, You never know. You never know what you're going to get that day. So, like, why not show up curious to see what you're going to get, curious to see where your training got you, rather than trying to meet this imaginary expectation of this demigod of yourself that is never going to happen. Like, let go of that stuff. Like, let go of it before the race. Let go of it in your 6 months before your race. Like, don't have that expectation of yourself. Just know, like, you're going to show up a version of yourself, and whatever that version is going to go to battle and get everything out of himself or herself that he could, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And that's why I think, like, in our training, it's good to have goals, right? To kind of structure how we go about things. But I think then, yeah, once you, in general, like, when you get to the race, it's like, this is now an exploration that I'm going into. Like, this is where I actually get to find out what's really there, not what I thought was there, you know? And I think to, like, it's almost like you refresh the mindset of, like, we've done all this training, but now is actually the part where I actually get to really see what's there, right? Because what exists in our minds, I think, like you'll hear people say, like, well, I could run this time, right? Like, well, I haven't run a 5K, but I'm sure I could run this, right? It's like, well, you don't know because you haven't actually done it, right? So I think it's good to always go into a race of, like,
definitely sub 4 miler for sure.
yeah. You should put that on, like, your Instagram or something. Definitely would have been a sub 4 mile if I had got another opportunity.
That 1500 I ran at Stanford had been 107 meters longer, I would have went sub 4 miles. No.
Yeah, I mean, there's a solid case for that.
So anyways, speaking of expectations, what were your, did you have any expectations going into the race? Because I know, like, when we were talking before, we're talking about pace and stuff, and other athletes would be asking me, like, what kind of shape do you think Chad's in? And I was like somewhere between 209 and 212-ish.
Yeah.
it is the course, right? So yeah. For you guys who don't know, like, Mesa does, it's a little bit up and down, but definitely a net downhill. But we didn't know what the weather was going to be like. We didn't know how the course ran and stuff. So, like, we had talked loosely about pace, but a lot of it was just like, dude, we're just going to have to feel it out when we're out there. So where was your head at when it came to expectations going into the race?
Yeah, you know, I think throughout the buildup, I was kind of with you on that, you know, given the course. And I'm a good downhill runner. Like, I didn't really know what was going to happen on it. Like, we're very much running the race based off of feel, which it's funny because I feel like when I'm prescribing people race prescriptions, I have a really hard time ever just, like, being like, just go off of feel. But it really is, you know, not a bad way to run, because ultimately, I think if you learn your body, and this is something Mitchell talks about, and I like that we have this sort of, like, trend in our run free stuff of, like, reconnecting with your body, like, trusting your body, listening to the cues, and, like, being willing to, like, develop that relationship again. I think when you get connected with your body in that way, like, you can feel that effort, you know, and I think you can let it guide, at least, like, to a certain extent, kind of guide you. So I think throughout the buildup, I was thinking on this course, I thought, you know, somewhere around 210 would be possible. Obviously, going under would be awesome. But I also was like, you know, this is my first marathon. I'd be happy anything up to like 215. I would still be like, that was a good effort out there. But I think as the race approach.
Maybe, think about it this way, like, Dathan debuted at New York in like 216, you know, a lot of guys like open up and it's, you know, you really don't know what you're going to get. 'Cause you've never been at mile 23 running 5 minute pace before, you know? So,
Totally.
Yeah, you really have an idea.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's so many really fast guys out there whose PRs are, yeah, like 216, 215, 214. So, and that's a fun thing to be, to a fun place to be, is where you kind of have some ideas about where you want to end up, but like the expectation is super light, you know? It's like, because that's a fun way to do it, where like, I'm not going to be disappointed. Like, I kind of knew that going to the race, like, I know I'm going to finish not disappointed, which is a really great place to start from. And, you know, approaching the race, like I said, and this kind of goes along with what we're talking about in terms of like, kind of have an expectation where you're going to be when you start, and then you actually get there. And I think that allows you to already kind of maybe adjust where you thought you might end up at. So I think heading towards a race, you know, I was very much looking, and I like to do this in general, is like start to look through the race a little bit of like, this is not the end goal. There's always going to be something coming after. So I was kind of thinking, you know, I'm not quite where I wanted to be. Like, there was definitely some bumps in the road in terms of just energy levels, you know, sickness early in the year. Like, there were some things that kind of like disrupted the whole buildup as a whole. So yeah, so then I was adjusting a little bit, where I was like, if I could run sub 5 minute pace, that would be like freaking awesome, but I would be definitely happy with anything a little bit over that. And I think that's another thing that happens, is sometimes, you know, like, these are just numbers. Until you run the race, you don't really know what that feels like, you know? Like, I think sometimes people do that, where they get an idea in their head of like, oh, I don't want to be like a 230 guy, I'm like a 220 guy. It's like, well, what do you, like, what does that even mean to you? That's just like based off of who you've seen run different times at various places, but you don't have no idea what that experience actually felt like for that person. So I think after the fact, like 212, I was happy with that. I felt like it wasn't like a home run, but it was a very good starting point. Like, we got on base with that one.
Well, here's the thing too, dude. It was a solo journey.
You were
all by yourself. So, like, you know, like, how fast do I think I could have run a marathon in practice by myself? I don't know, dude. Running sub 210 would have been real hard by myself, you know? Even like at the trials, wearing 209, like, I had company for the first like 16 miles. I wasn't just out there in my head for 26 miles by myself. So, I mean, that alone, dude, is pretty crazy. You want to pat yourself on the back for just like being able to get that out of yourself by yourself is pretty crazy. What do you attribute that to? Like, how do you feel like you're able to get that much out of yourself when you're all alone the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, for one, like, I'm very well practiced at it. You know, I do a lot of my workouts on my own. And yeah, just in general, I for whatever reason, I feel like I've never really struggled to like work out on my own and kind of get the job done. But it does, it is challenging, right? Like, I think on the back half of the course, especially, it's like, as the sun came up, like, there was some little gusty wind bits where I could kind of feel it in my face, and you're just on this open, like, big open highway, and you just feel like you're just like lost in space, you know? And those moments, I definitely felt like it would have been helpful to be in a group of guys there. But I also didn't feel like it was, you know, I think you still have to manage the effort. So yeah, for whatever reason, you know, I don't find it tremendously challenging. Although I do think that like being able to just kind of turn your mind off and just be in a group and not be thinking about the pace throughout is helpful, to just not, you know, have to check the watch, have to make sure that you're not slipping. And I think that that's probably, I think it's probably in the last like 10K, a little bit over, where like being in a group, you know, that kind of keeps the pace moving along would have been helpful for sure.
Even though like it during the beginning stages of the race, like, what my custom was to do was to try to like be as turned off as possible, like try to like not be mentally like turned on, engaged. You know how it is, like, anytime you're doing something hard and you're engaged in that, like, in a very mental way, time just goes by so slow, you know, because like you're just having to be like on it the whole time mentally. Like, you can never relax. And that's the beauty of like running in a pace group or a pack, is you can just turn off your mind. You're like, all I have to think about is staying right next to this guy the whole time. That's it. You know, like, there's no like, make sure you stay on it. Check. Let's make sure that you're turning over the right way. You know, like, there's no, when you're out there by yourself, you have no accountability. Like, you can just slow down. No one cares. Like, you won't even notice, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that tough skill and one that you have to kind of learn. But I think the ideal scenario is to run with people. You're always going to run quicker with people than by yourself, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Which, it's funny, that whole part of like, and we had talked about this a little bit, but the bit of not getting too emotional early on, where like, I feel like I've been on this like kind of like emotional personal journey over the last like 5 to 10 years that feels like it's really like gained momentum in the last while. And we start at 6:30 in the morning, it's like dark, there's fireworks at the start line. And then there's like a full moon, like just right over the horizon. And we like come down the first mile, make a right turn, and the full moon's right there. You're riding off to my left. I have like a police escort up front. Like, my girlfriend just been there. Jasmine was out with Claire. And man, I almost got super emotional right there, where I was just like so thankful for the opportunity I had and just how, like, I don't know, just the support. I was just like feeling all of it. I had to like calm down. I was like, oh man, like, cool it. You got to save that for later.
Yeah, I love that. I love that first mile. So I'm on the bike off the course. Of course, I was off the course the entire way. But I just hear these footsteps coming at me because it's totally dark. You can't see anything. And then the fireworks went off and stuff when you guys started. But then it's just total blackness, dude. And I just hear it sounds like these horses coming at me, dude, like these hooves.
The
like
alpha flies. Pow, 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 pow.
Yeah. The alpha fly horse coming. But then just kind of like break out your silhouette. And dude, it's so cool. You were just, you know how when you run at night too, like your sense of speed kind of shifts. And like, you could be running fast, but running at night, it like, man, it really looks like you're freaking sprinting, you know? And that's how you look, like Usain Bolt or something. Like this now. And I was like, it looks freaking good right now. And I could kind of feel what you were experiencing, and I liked it, dude. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Actually, now to circle back to the other question of things that I was maybe a little bit worried about, like, I'm trying to think, I don't think I've ever started a race in the dark before. And the times that I have run like at night, like, I remember just cruising along thinking I'm flying, and you look at your watch and you're like, I'm not going that fast, dang it. Like, the perception just gets totally thrown. So I was actually a little bit worried that my first mile I'd think I was blazing and it'd be like 5:20, like rolling downhill or something, you know? And I'd be like, So the funny thing is then, like, so I clicked my watch at the start, and I think it must have been on a previous page. So then I went to check my pace to, like, make sure I wasn't doing that. And my watch hadn't started, so then I had to start it. So I still don't have a full marathon on Strava. So we have to go back and do another marathon. But it was, yeah, unofficial. That's what I should have put, unofficial first marathon, because Strava didn't verify it. I think my first mile was 4:42, but that was probably like the most, that's probably the most downhill mile of like the whole race, I think.
Dude, so one of my secret powers now is because I've spent so much time riding my bike next to athletes that I'm pretty good, dude. I can guess usually within like 5 seconds of how fast someone is running.
Really?
Based on their cadence and turnover. Yeah.
That's pretty good, dude. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, so I was working out with Rory yesterday, one of Ryan's athletes, and he was telling me, because we've yet to actually even, like, that was, I think, the first time you've ever ridden on the bike with me, and Rory was telling me some of your cues where he's like, every time we get halfway through the race, Ryan goes, "This is your first one." All right, thanks guys for tuning in to the podcast. Obviously, Ryan and I got cut off there. For longtime listeners, you guys know that Ryan has notoriously bad internet connection. We had some storms rolling in that cut the conversation short. But that said, the whole thing ended up being pretty long. So we're actually going to do this in a 3-part series. So there'll be 2 more parts breaking down my race and just experience with my first marathon, trying to share some principles with you guys and things that I learned and maybe things that you can apply to your own training. One of the things I really enjoyed about this conversation was just giving you guys a little bit of insight into that coach-athlete relationship. And for me, I know it's been such a fun process to bring Ryan on board and to have him join me on this journey that we're on heading towards the marathon and hopefully heading to the Olympic trials in 2024. There's a lot of things that I think are very beneficial about having a coach, but one of them is just having somebody on the journey with you. And I know it's been so much more fun and so much more enjoyable to share this experience with somebody and kind of have them understand the process that I'm going through and be able to speak into it. I think in some ways it's very difficult to be the athlete and the coach. When you're completely alone in that, it can be very difficult. And then past that, you know, having a guide who has been where you're trying to go and can help shortcut you to that end goal and not have to have so much time figuring out these little nuances here and there. And certainly for me, having Ryan be such an experienced and successful marathoner, as I'm trying to learn the marathon process, it's been tremendously helpful to have his knowledge and experience to integrate into my own process. So if you guys are looking for your own coach, you can head on over to runfreetraining.com. We offer free consultations where you can just figure out if it's a good fit for you. And we have lots of coaches with lots of different experiences. So I think that's an important component of like finding somebody that you really mesh with, who understands you, that you feel like can really speak into your process moving forward. So thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode.